Welcome to the Human Performance Podcast. Here we talk about everything to do with human performance and how leaders and organizations can get the best out of themselves and their people. I'm your host, Alex Young. My guest on the podcast this week is Marie Leslie. Marie is a business consultant and messaging strategist who specializes in helping small businesses become more productive, more focused, and more successful. She's a lifelong entrepreneur who started her first business age 13. And on today's podcast, we talk about productivity, simplifying processes, and how you can get the best out of your day. Hi, Marie. Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Thank you. And you?
Very well, indeed. Very well. Looking forward to the holiday period and a bit of a break, but otherwise excellent. It's fantastic to connect with you and have you on the podcast today. You've got a fantastically interesting background and a wealth of experience to share with everyone listening and watching. So it'd be great if you could sort of just give an overview about your background and what's led you to where you are at the moment.
All right. Well, I am a business consultant, specializes in productivity and messaging, business organization. I have been an entrepreneur since I can remember. My first job as a child was actually my own business. Had another business in high school, and then while I was in college, started a photography studio. But following conventional wisdom, I did a turn in the corporate world for a number of years until I realized that just was not home for me. But was there long enough, though, to figure out how it worked and what worked and what didn't work? I got my photography single, did that full time for about 30 years. During that time, I began doing consulting for businesses, first with helping them transition to the internet, doing some marketing consulting, and then eventually full time, realizing that my true love in business is communications and organization. And that's what's brought me to where I am today.
Well, fantastic. And I think whenever I speak to anyone about organization and especially organization and focus in business, one of the key things I always think about is setting priorities. Now, I know that this is something that's quite close to your heart. So if you're going in and consulting with either an early stage business or a larger corporate, what are some of the things that you look at in terms of what their focus is and what they're prioritizing, and how can you improve that for them?
Well, the first thing we do look at is what are their priorities? What are their goals? What do they hope to accomplish in this business, especially for small, newer businesses with solo entrepreneurs or small teams? Most people who hang out a shingle and go into business for themselves generally aren't thinking about how to run the business. They're thinking about doing the thing they love to do, and that's where a lot of businesses run into trouble. They aren't suddenly realize that they aren't sure about all those background things, and they tend to complicate themselves a bit. So we take a step back and look at those things first, and then we look at where they're getting stuck and where they're getting hung up and start creating a plan from there.
And one of the things that I often talk about is making sure that you're focusing down on the key things that are going to get your business to the next stage. And certainly when you're in an early stage company, there's so much going on. And especially, as you mentioned, if you've got a small founding team or just a small team in general, it can seem quite overwhelming where to position that focus. But one of the key areas when you're starting to monetize whatever you're building is focusing around your positioning and how you're communicating what you do to the market. And with your marketing hat on, what are some of the things that you advise early stage companies or companies who are sort of taking a new product to market to do in terms of their positioning, their strategy, and their messaging?
Well, the first thing is, who is your ideal client? Who are you selling to? One of the big issues that a lot of smaller businesses have is everyone. Well, everyone needs my product. Everyone needs my service. They may, but everyone isn't going to buy it. And so the first thing we do is drill down and create that ideal customer so that they have a focus on who they're talking to, who they're marketing to, who ideally they want to work with. We've all worked you know, at times with the wrong client, somehow miscommunicated our message. And there is nothing tougher, not just from a profit standpoint, but from that mental and psychological standpoint of trying to make it work with the wrong client. So the first thing we do really is, who is it? Who do you want to market to? And then from there, we can figure out how to market and what we need to do.
And when marketing teams or early stage organizations are starting to look at those customer personas, what are some of the specific practical tips that you will sort of utilize there? And how granular will you go into the background of a persona when you're building one out?
Well, you know, it really is, since most of the people that I work with are, you know, professional services, that sort of thing, as opposed to selling a product, we look at a lot, you know, once we have that ideal client, where are they hanging out? Where are you going to reach them? How are you going to reach them? How are you going to communicate their pain points without shaming them, you know, in a positive way? That's, let's help you reach these goals. You know, working with us will make your life easier. How are we going to make that happen for you? And helping them to communicate the positive things. It's very easy to fall into the, you have this problem and this problem and this problem. We want to do it into more of a case of, let's help you do this better and this better and this better. People seem to be more responsive to the positive messaging once you hit their pain point.
Really interesting. And in terms of the you know, the focus is around things like marketing, positioning, building an audience, sales, building your team. For early stage companies, that you know, there's lots of things they can focus on. And certainly I've been guilty with some of my companies in the past of, you know, deliberately or not deliberately in some cases, of just letting one of those slide. In terms of, you know, marketing specifically, how important is building an audience for early stage companies as they start to take on customers?
Building an audience is important, but it's more about quality than just numbers. You want to build the right audience. You don't want to be out just throwing things on the wall to see what sticks and see how many people you can get. Better to go very, I would say, specifically after the right people from the beginning. I would much rather communicate with 1,000 ideal clients than 100,000 disinterested followers on social media. One, it costs a lot more to try and manage an audience that size, both in terms of money and in time. With that smaller focused audience, you can create systems. You can recreate repeatable marketing that's going to reach them and expand those quality clients, as opposed to just shooting it out there and hoping somebody's listening.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic advice, especially with limited resources in early stage companies, where you have got to be absolutely laser focused in terms of anything you're spending on paid advertising or anything like that. Just kind of, you know, extrapolating back a second, you've obviously worked with a number of organizations across different sectors and different things that they're selling and different stages. What are some of the common things and mistakes that you see when you get asked to come in to sort of consult with some of these organizations?
One of the things is, especially with a company that started out small and expanded, is we either start out as a solo entrepreneur, excuse me, do all the jobs in the beginning. You just sort of div everything up and you do it. And then eventually everybody is full up. And so we hire somebody and we give them jobs and we keep doing that. And pretty soon, nobody knows what anybody else is responsible for. And so one of the things I'll often come in and do is look at procedures and help people define more clearly their job roles based on their strengths and the needs of the company. And from there, start putting together systems and routines that can really run themselves and free those employees up. But once we have, you know, we have one person doing email newsletters and one person doing social media and one person doing onboarding of clients and maybe three people are onboarding or whatever, because they just sort of picked up those jobs. When we can clarify and outline those so that people know what they're doing, know what they're expected, get those systems in place, then the company can almost start running itself and you can focus on the fun things like growth and you know, serving the clients and bringing in new new clients as opposed to being mired down in who missed this and who missed that.
And what sort of, you know, some of your advice to anyone listening where, you know, maybe they're doing quite a lot of, you know, manual tasks still, or they're getting overloaded with information. What are some of your kind of top hacks for automating some of those things and improving your productivity?
The first thing is, for example, with clients, because that's really kind of the most important thing. We need to be keeping track of, especially like I said, in a service-oriented business where it's going to be an ongoing relationship. How are you onboarding them? How are you keeping track of them? What system do you have for communicating? That's one of the big automated things. For example, setting up a regular communication newsletter, whatever you want to call it, system with your clients. For example, I had a client who had that exact problem. They had a dozen employees and everybody onboarded new clients in their own way. And they had no system for communicating. And so until the subscription renewals came up, the clients weren't hearing from them. And while the company was great at bringing on clients, their retention rate was horrible. We sat down, we figured out a common onboarding system so everyone was doing it the same, and then set them up to feed into a monthly communication so that they were hearing on a regular basis. Once we did that, retention rate shot up and the company doubled their revenue within a couple of years and were able to meet some big lifelong goals of the owner.
That's fantastic. And just in very, very practical terms there, and appreciating that everyone will be different and have their own preferences, what are some of the systems that you would recommend using? Because obviously for things like a CRM and managing your customers, there are things like Salesforce, HubSpot, and so forth. And then for messaging your customers and staying in touch with them, you've got the various plethora of mailing systems, from MailChimp to ConvertKit to things like Intercom, where you can give sort of more specific focused messaging. Do you have any particular preference on those, or do you think it's really down to the companies to make that decision?
I think some of it really depends on the needs of the company. MailChimp is always a good entry point, partly because it's free, so it can help you figure out the ins and outs of how that type of messaging platform works. There's a number of other ones that have some different, kind of free to a certain point. I think one of them is a company called MooseSend, who I just kind of checking out. And it depends on the type of company you are and the type of newsletter you send. I use one company that's called BirdSend, and it's specifically for a text-only type newsletter, which is nice. It doesn't have a lot of bells and whistles, but it sends out a nice, clean, makes it very deliverable. So it kind of depends. If you're looking for something more image-heavy, if you're really looking for a sales vehicle, that's going to be a different one. Obviously, CRM is critical, and then whatever newsletter type program that you choose, you want something that can integrate, where as part of your onboarding system, they can automatically be imported into your list with permission, obviously, never add anyone. Without that, that does not do well for your image or your customer's happiness. So those are kind of the big things. Have a way to keep track of who your customer is, what their needs are, what your communication is with them. It's really helpful especially in a high touch business, to have something where you can look back and say, oh yeah, so-and-so talked to this person once a month or sent them an email once a month. Here are their concerns. Having a designated person who can deal with those things is really helpful too, so that whoever it is, whether it's an account manager or a person specifically over answering questions and doing that sort of thing, your customer has somebody consistent. And there's little more frustrating than calling a company that you have an ongoing relationship with and getting a different person every time and feeling like you're starting over.
That's really, really great advice. And on this podcast, we often talk about the importance of onboarding for employees and getting people to value who are new hires. But what are your thoughts on onboarding customers? into your business? And what are some of the systems and methods that you advise people to go about onboarding new customers?
The ones that my clients seem to have gravitated to the most would be Salesforce and also Zoho, because there's a lot of integrations for maybe industry specific, to their industry, additional software that they can use for customer management and sales management and that sort of thing. So those are kind of two of the big ones that we probably use more than anything else. And admittedly, I don't really want to learn every single piece of software out there. So I will usually, if they don't have one in place, I'll usually recommend one of those. If they have something else already in place, then I will, look at it if it's not something I'm familiar with and evaluate it and see how we can make it work or whether we should recommend making a change. If you're not using a program effectively and there's something else that's going to be easier for you to actually do that with, then we'll look at a change. But I think it is, like I said, especially in the service industry, that implies that you want an ongoing relationship. You need to be onboarding customers in a way that they're comfortable with and that you're getting enough information from them to be able to serve them well and have room for growth.
You're listening to the Human Performance Podcast by Verti. If you're enjoying this episode, why not join our newsletter? When you sign up, you'll receive a copy of Level Up straight to your inbox every Thursday with the latest tips, tricks, and news about all things human performance. Head over to verti.com/newsletter to sign up. That's verti.com/newsletter. You can find this in the show notes. Anyway, back to the episode.
Really interesting. And I mean, we've touched on dealing with different priorities for both leaders and employees in early stage businesses. In terms of the day to day of an individual in a fast moving organization, do you have any advice for optimizing a single person's productivity, either from, your own experience of doing lots and lots of things, but also from when you've been working with some of these organizations?
Okay. Yeah. Obviously the first thing one is having a well-defined job role, them knowing what they're doing and what's expected of them, and then having those tools to do it. Obviously an excellent, a calendar of some kind, whether you're using Google calendars or Outlook calendar, you have something specific to your job. That's one. Reasonable expectations and clear. This is where communication comes in. Your employees are going to be much more productive if they not only know what's expected of them and you're communicating clearly, but if they feel free to come to you and say, I'm having a problem with this, or this isn't working right, or this is not a realistic deadline. So one of the keys is that open communication and having them feel like they can, come to the boss with anything or make it work, or come to your team and say, I need some help with this.
Really interesting, and from your own experiences again of going through multiple businesses and being an entrepreneur, since a very, very young age, what about some of the difficult aspects of entrepreneurship? How do you think people can kind of enjoy entrepreneurship and maintain that kind of fun aspect when dealing with all these different things they need to prioritize and focusing on things like revenue growth, which can be up and down, especially for things like services business on the back of things like the pandemic?
Yeah, that's one of the tough ones. People go into it. I don't know. I did. And I had absolutely, when I started my photography studio, I had no clue what I was getting into as a full-time business. I mean, there's a big difference between running these little teenage part-time ventures, which was a great education in a lot of things. But I knew enough to know the legalities of starting a business, that I needed business licenses and sales tax permits and those kind of things. But it was the ongoing, and I'll admit, my least favorite business task is, for example, bookkeeping. That was my first hire. When I finally could hire somebody, I hired a bookkeeper, and smartest thing I ever did. But it's recognizing that being an entrepreneur does not mean doing it all yourself. People have that idea that that's what entrepreneurs are. Smart entrepreneurs have teams. Whether it's outsourcing to virtual assistants or contract bookkeepers or a marketing agency or whatever it is that you need to do, do the parts of the business that you love. If it's selling, find someone else to fill the orders for you. There's always help. As my studio grew, and certainly, you know, think about photography studios, some times of the year are insanely busy, where if I were doing it myself, and in fact, in the early days I did, I would work 80 or 90 hours a week, which is not conducive to good health or having a family or anything else. I hired teenagers to come in and package orders for me. As my kids got old enough, they all went to work at some point in the business. My 7 and 8 year olds put together marketing packages and stamped and addressed envelopes back in the days when we did, direct mail pieces. My older kids came in and acted as studio assistants. One had a cleaning business. My children also were all entrepreneurs for a time. Had a cleaning business, and she and her friends came in and cleaned our studio for us and for pay and those kind of things. But it's outsourcing where you can, figuring out what you're not good at, where are your sticking points. And that's one of the things we work on is when they come to me and say, I hate this, the first thing we'll do is figure out how to hire it out. And that's, you know, part of what keeps it fun. And the other thing is having a support network. Find a group in your area with other entrepreneurs. It's great to have family support. It's great to have friend support. But there's nothing like having other entrepreneurs who understand what it means to be an entrepreneur and who understands those unique challenges of being in business for yourself.
I mean, just focusing in on, you know, your background in photography, it occurs mm-hmm. to me that as a service has, you know, in quite recent times gone through a huge amount of change in terms of how it's sort of viewed and who your kind of customer is, because as we've had the rise of social media over the last sort of 10 to 15 years, you've got, you know, businesses which rely on things like Instagram, which is obviously very, very visual. And there's more and more people going into learning how to photograph well, whether that is for things like, you know, a food photography channel or some of these other niches like, you know, different influencers and things like that. How have you seen that particular, service change over the years? And how do you think that sort of helped you as an entrepreneur to see some of those trends?
Well, it has, definitely gone under phenomenal changes. I started back in the film photography days. So it was a long time ago. My kids will tell you it was the dark ages. So the experience was very different then. You really needed to go to a photographer for any type of events or formal headshots, that sort of thing. And so did a lot of that. Moved into the digital age eventually as the technology improved and changed. And that weeded out a lot of people who weren't able to make that transition. Part of my very early training in photography, and obviously not knowing it at the time, made digital a really easy transition for me, just the way the technology worked. But as photography has gotten into more technology and cameras have gotten smarter and, it's vastly changed how that works. And probably only 10 to 15% of my colleagues are still full-time professional photographers, as opposed to 15 years ago. Most of them have second jobs, that sort of thing. But it's taught me to watch the market very closely and to recognize early on when things are changing, before they change, and to look at something and say, how might this development change the way I run my business? And even in consulting, I have seen things change with the availability of, I can just take a course and do that online. And it's like, great, go for it. Let's see how that works. And very often that gives them a background to get started, but then it's, I don't know how to adapt this to my own business, so I need you to come and help me anyway. I think just technology in general has led people to more of a DIY mindset But I think we're also seeing a shift back to DIY doesn't always work, and it doesn't make us happy as entrepreneurs or profitable.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing to mention, which is obviously if you're pivoting and sort of teaching some of the skills that you might have done as a service previously, that's great. But often, you know, people still will want that level of expertise, which as much as they can learn online, it's going to take them either a very long time to get adept at whatever the skill is you're teaching, or, you know, they're just not going to be quite as good as someone who's got that expert and master level of having practiced whatever it is for, 20, 30 years or something like that. In terms of, your consulting and some of the organizations you worked with, what are some of your most interesting, perhaps proudest achievements where you've sort of made an impact to a business that's grown?
One was I worked with a service company where one of the owner's goals was to eventually own his own building, which might seem a strange goal, but, you know, for long-term profitability, you know, that's not a bad thing, especially at some point you have then now two separate assets. You have a business and you have a physical facility. And by setting up systems and reorganizing not only the physical office space, which was the first thing we did, because that does physical disorganization really can hamper your business productivity. So that was the first thing. And we went through that physical organization and then creating the systems, putting an actual plan in place for how to run and grow the business other than go out and get new clients and, continue to sell. Within about, I'd say 3 years after we started working together, he bought a building. And then eventually when it came time to retire, sold the business itself and then had this business producing residual retirement income for him by leasing it out to other companies. That was one. I also worked with a medical think tank where it was a very small organization, very low-tech owner when they started and is struggling to break even. And by helping him refine the way they were setting up the meetings, registering people, and that sort of thing, we were able to increase profitability by about 75% in the first year, reduce no-shows to his events by about 60%, which is a huge difference when you're talking about paid events, going from make a reservation and pay at the door to, and then no-showing and so no income, to register and pay here online if you don't show up well. thank you for your donation. Well, it made a big difference. And that business has gone, I think, doubled in membership in the 4 years that we worked together, and is now expanding into other areas and has, as a result of the pandemic, we were able to move events from in-person to online almost overnight. And it actually led to the pandemic year being their most profitable year ever, which is kind of interesting because, you don't really think of it as, oh, the pandemic was good for our business. And now they're exploring podcasts and hybrid events and opening chapters in other parts of the country.
Fantastic. I mean, what amazing impact and what great examples. And as we start to wrap up, I always ask people at the end of these podcasts who people's human performance hero is. So I'm very interested to hear who yours might be, Marie.
Okay, well, looking at the obvious, my parents were my first cheerleaders. My mom would always say to me as a kid, what are you going to do for a real job? From the time I was little, I write, and I was going to be a writer. And I do still do that, but she was like, what are you going to do for a real job? My dad, on the other hand, both of them said, you can do anything. You can be anything you want to be. You can do any kind of career you want. And didn't have those traditional girls do this and boys do that growing up. And so there was always that sense of, if I want this enough, I can do it. And there were a few really kind of key events that occurred in my adolescence that led to this. They supported me as a 12-year-old starting a business, so you can't complain about that. I didn't know too many other kids who had their own business at that age, in doing things other than babysitting or delivering newspapers. So that really, I think, were and learning their stories and how, you know, they came from difficult backgrounds and became successful. My mother, for example, was a teacher who started a vocational training program for cooking. And when health problems came and she couldn't do that anymore, she became a stockbroker specializing in international bond funds. You know, I don't know too many moms who did that back in the day. But it was an inspiration that you can reinvent yourself at any age.
No, that's a great example. And quite amazing. I can see how they sort of affected you, throughout your career. Just in terms of, contact, if anyone does want to reach out and work with you or find out a little bit more, where can they go to do so?
All right. Well, my website is smallbusinesssimplifier.com. So that's probably the easiest. I'm also on LinkedIn as Marie Leslie, Instagram, Twitter. I have the same name everywhere. It's Marie Leslie. Made it easy when I started out. But probably LinkedIn and my website would be the easiest ways to find me. And again, it's smallbusinesssimplifier.com.
Amazing. Well, Marie, thank you so much for joining us today. I hope you have an enjoyable and productive rest of your day, and look forward to speaking again very soon.
That sounds great. I'm looking forward to it, and thank you for having me.